using our First Amendment rights to their fullest. It's the Jack's Loose Cannons Podcast with hosts Hayden Aldersey and Tony Edwards. These guys know that something is horribly wrong with governments all over the world. If we can't discuss what's going on, we can't understand it, let alone confront it. We are in a fight to hold on to our individual liberty. Let's get into this. Here are your Jack's Loose Cannons.
Welcome, everybody, to the very first episode of Loose Cannons Jacks. I'm Tony Edwards.
And I'm Hayden. As you might have guessed, I'm from Australia. Between us, we're going to bring you some views on the way that the crazy leftness is being pushed all over the world at the moment. Now, I've lived in the UK and Australia and in Singapore and a couple other places, and I keep getting a sense that what we're seeing here, I've seen it all before.
And I also lived in a fascist country as well, New York.
You're an escapee, aren't you?
Yep. So welcome, everyone, to this very first episode of this podcast. This is a conservative podcast like you've never seen before. We are 100% anti-establishment, 100% anti-grifter, 100% anti-rhino here. So this is a grifter-free zone at Jack's Loose Cannons. If you want to listen to the Grifter podcast, listen to the Sean Hannity show, not here.
And if you think you might be offended by something, you might want to tune out.
Yeah, this is not a place. There's no trigger warnings, okay? No safe spaces. This is not a safe space.
Okay, so a little bit about me. I'm from Australia. I'm obviously a little bit older than Tony here. So I bring a breadth of knowledge to the podcast, and I'm hoping to look at some of the things I've seen happen over the last 30, 40 years, compare them to what's happening now, and we'll analyze what's happening in the papers and particularly what's happened in the last few elections.
So, Hayden, tell our audience about what you did in Australia.
Oh, I started off a long time ago. I was a firefighter and I was also in the Army Reserve for a long time. Rose to the little heights of lieutenants, platoon commander, stomping around, burying things under the bushes. And then after that, I went to the UK and managed to successfully turn a small business into a micro business, back to Australia for a while. And I worked for government as a in the security and fire safety side of things.
Wow. Well, Hayden, you've definitely done a lot, and you're definitely someone that we all could learn from. My name is Tony Edwards. I am of Italian descent. I don't know how my last name ended up Edwards. I'll tell you, it's my middle name. I'm like Angelina Jolie or Tom Cruise, whose real name is actually Thomas Cruise Mapother IV. Fun fact, you learn something new every day, every time you talk to me. But I actually am a young adult author, which is not the profession you would think when you're hearing a right-wing podcaster. I'm probably the only young adult author still around that is not a raging radical woke leftist.
And I hope you got at least a few rainbows in your book. I
mean, no, nothing at all. It's just a story about time travel. So the series that I am in the process of writing is called A Matter of Time. It is available online at amotseries.com. So that is amotseries.com. And it is about five teenagers from present day who get transported back to the 1970s. And that's just book one. They have to figure out why they're there. They have to figure out who brought them back there. And book one has been out for a couple of months. Book two is in the works. It's going to be out in probably at the end of this year. And there's seven books that are going to be in the series. So,
sounds awesome, Tony. As I said, I've got a couple of copies to give to my kids when they come over. Sounds like a really exciting series.
Absolutely. But in addition to writing Matter of Time, I also have worked in the conservative movement for a number of years. I actually work full-time in the movement now. Full-time means when I'm not writing the book or doing my many other things that I do. But
that's how we met. Yeah. I mean, we both bumped into each other at CPAC, and I heard this guy talking about this crazy book he's writing, and he heard this Aussie voice in the background, and
yeah,
we hit it off.
We met on the Trump line. So, Donald Trump is he's like, you just can't actually go to his event. You have to wait on a line. I think it was a 2.5 hour wait right?
Yeah, and don't lose your place.
Yeah, you can't lose your place. So the person you are next to online, you're stuck with that person for a while. And fortunately for me and unfortunately for Hayden, we were next to each other.
And not to mention a few guys from the Tea Party movement who kept chundering on about that for hours. Yeah.
The Tea Party is still alive and it's still well. It's awesome.
Mm. Great bunch of folks there, though. I really enjoyed the crowd there. It was fantastic.
CPAC was great. It's just unbelievable the amount of excitement right now in the conservative movement. I haven't actually seen this much excitement since like the first Tea Party movement back in 2010. So that is what we're going to discuss today on this first episode. We're going to discuss where we are today as a country and where we are as a conservative movement. Now, things look pretty bleak for us. We have I don't even want to start to describe this president in the White House. You know, he's not a president, as my very good friend, not in real life, Ben Shapiro, says he is a venal houseplant. He is barely animate, and he is taking orders from very radical activist groups, and it's just a mess. And the House of Representatives is controlled by Nancy Pelosi. Now, another thing about me, I am a practicing Catholic. It just makes me very mad that she considers herself a practicing Catholic too, and she passes these radically pro-abortion up until birth and even after birth stances. And then the Senate, Chuck Schumer from the state that I escaped from, it's just a dumpster fire, this Democrat government right now. They're trying to pass this one radical leftist policy after another. But Hayden, you think 2022, this is going to be the year we take back power?
Well, you get a sense there's a pushback coming, don't you? I mean, we've seen all of the normal Democrat tricks. There's been just most recently the Uvalde shooting, and they've just trotted out all the old anti-gun stuff, and that doesn't seem to really be taking that well. I mean, a tragedy. They're just trying to exploit it again, and a lot of the other things, the abortion thing, they somehow generated a leak from the Supreme Court, and they then tried to generate some momentum with the whole abortion issue again. They've got no real policies to stand on. Everything they're doing is not working, and you can obviously see that from the way Biden's conducting himself and the way they keep walking back things he says, that there's the whole White House is in disarray, and for a country, especially like America, that's just no way to be. It's not like parliamentary democracy where cabinets have a lot to do with what goes on. The White House has got executive power, and that's got to be very clearly run by someone who's in charge, and Biden obviously isn't.
No, and it's just crazy. Just what Hayden was saying, the Democrats, they know they're going to lose. They know that their trifecta is going to be doomed. It looks the betting odds are very good that the Republicans are going to get both of the houses. They're definitely going to get the House. That is a done deal. The Senate is going to be more of we're going to have to work more to get it, but I think it's a very good chance that we're going to take back both the House and the Senate. The presidency, hopefully, that will go our way in 2024. Hopefully, our governor, Ron DeSantis, is the nominee. I'm really sorry, love Donald Trump, but dude is going to be 76. I mean, it's time. It's time for somebody else younger to take over. DeSantis.
I've got to disagree. I mean, I think Trump's a really good guy to take the party forward into the next couple of years. But then, as I've also said, there's succession issues. The Republican Party's got to build a depth to its candidates at the presidential and leadership level. You know, they can't just rely on Trump ad infinitum. Yeah. Even though I like him to death, you know.
Well, we literally met on the line to see him. So every time you like think one of us is a quote unquote never Trumper, Just remember that we literally met on an almost 3-hour line to see him speak, and we also had to wait for about 8 hours before he actually came up and watch other speakers, and we couldn't leave.
And if you think the COVID lockdown was bad, the lockdown pre-Trump was something else. Stuck in a ballroom with 2,000 people.
Yep. All right. Well, We're talking a lot about American politics right now, where we are as a country. And as we both said, the tide is definitely turning. Mm. We've had a lot of victories as a conservative movement, as the right, starting with the elections last year in Virginia. We got Glenn Youngkin become the governor of Virginia.
That was great to see. I mean, I was still overseas when that happened, so it was a real uplift when that that came through. Yep. Great result.
And we almost had Republicans win the governorship of New Jersey. We lost by just a hair. And I blame that election defeat in New Jersey on people moving to Florida. I think it's awesome that people are moving to Florida. This state pretty much went from a swing state to red in just pretty much overnight. But if just a couple thousand less people didn't move to Florida, I think Jersey would have had a Republican governor right now. And then also, not just the elections, but we've had a lot of court victories as conservatives. We had the Kyle Rittenhouse victory, thank God.
Yeah.
The right to defend yourself is still around. It's still valid.
And that throws into sharp relief what's happening now with the debate going on after Uvalde. I mean, if Kyle Rittenhouse had been subject to laws that prevented him having a firearm before 21, there's a good chance he would have been killed that night. So it's a pretty important topic with relevant current stuff going on.
Absolutely. And going to more current court rulings, such as a couple of months ago, the terrible vaccine mandate from Biden got struck down, thank God. And also the Roe v. Wade, not official yet, but it looks like that Roe v. Wade is going to be history in a matter of days. Mm. So, yeah, great things happening in America. Australia, as we like to say.
Not so much. Most of my friends say, what the freak, Australia? What's going on down there? I mean, there's been lockdowns, severe lockdowns. The country's still not open up to tourists coming in. Most Australians aren't allowed to leave the country unless they've got a special reason. They've got to get special permission to leave their own country. So travel's completely screwed over there.
Wow.
I mean, they had some really bad incidents in Victoria. Victoria was where the local state government treated people the worst. It was at a couple of demonstrations, it got very rough with people. One of them even fired rubber bullets at basically family groups who were just demonstrating with placards, because no one's armed down there, so there's no sort of threat to the police in any level.
And that's just what happens when the government just takes your guns away. You know, there is...
Well, yeah, I mean, the government there does not fear people in Australia. I mean, Australia is pretty docile anyway. So for them to come out so heavily handed was just completely, completely crazy. And on the conservative movement side of things, there's been a real pushback towards conservatism in Australia. A lot of people suddenly thought that was really wrong. A few people may have heard of a guy called Ricardo Bozzi, who was an ex-SAS colonel. He started leading the Australia One movement before the last election. And he actually managed to get a demonstration of somewhere between 1 and 2 million people in Canberra, which is almost unheard of. I mean, usually a demonstration in Canberra are a few thousand people.
Canberra is the capital, right?
Yeah, that's the capital. Yeah. Deliberately built about 4 or 5 hours drive from the nearest city so that people can't go and protest there easily.
Wow. So that would be like if we had the U.S. capital like in the middle of like...
Wyoming.
Yeah, Wyoming. Wow.
It's pretty isolated area. So anyway, there's been some big moves down there in Australia. It caused a lot of ructions. We had a federal election back on the 21st of May, and the people who won it, the Australian Labor Party, which is a socialist party essentially, they only got 32% of the vote.
So that's like the same thing that happened in Canada, their last election. Trudeau's party got, I think, 32.8% of the vote.
Yeah.
And I just think it's crazy that the people on the left, they say, oh, democracy, it's about direct democracy, and they want to get rid of the Electoral College because it's not democratic. Mm. But with the Electoral College, you can't win an election with 32% of the vote. You can in Canada, you can in Australia.
Mm. And we've, what's worse, what magnifies the problem in Australia, I don't know about Canada, but we use a ranked preferencing system or preferences. So
is that like, for example, you want to say like Hayden Aldersey 1, Tony Edwards 2, so on.
President Trump 4, whatever.
President Trump 4.
So you list them all and And as they as the votes are counted, basically people get two or three votes, their votes shared out amongst other people. And there was a big move in Australia in, back in May to try and get people to vote the for the major parties last so that they didn't get the preferences votes. And it was just too hard for people to figure out. So the preferences, a lot of preferences still floated to the flowed over to the major parties.
Now, why is this system, you think it's ripe for corruption? Is that what your point is, Hayden?
It's not so much ripe for corruption, but it distorts what the electorate actually wants. So it favours minor parties or groups of minor parties. So the left-wing crowd in Australia, they've got the Australian Labor Party, they've got the Greens, they've got things called the Teal Independents. Whereas on the Conservative side, there's only the Liberal Party and the National Party, which usually operate in coalition anyway. So the Conservatives usually get very little benefit from preferences. And unless they're in an electorate that traditionally votes Conservative almost entirely, they just don't win seats very easily.
So this system, you think, disadvantages the right?
It favours minority governments, and that tends to be disadvantaging the right. In Britain, back about 2010 or something, they did they were looking at trying to change the voting system in Britain, because there they use first past the post, very similar to here. And they looked at the ranked preferencing system, and essentially the British government declared that it was essentially a fraud on voters.
They said, they looked at it and they said, no way.
Don't want to bring that in here.
And it's crazy that we're talking about this now, because a lot of Americans think that this is the way to go. So something that you'll hear a lot on this podcast is we'll be talking about another country, probably Australia. And what we're hearing about Australia, like, wait a second, that is happening here in America. And that is a point we're trying to get across.
Yeah.
This whole flirtation with tyranny on the left and this pushback by us conservatives is not just American. It's happening all around the world, particularly in the Anglosphere countries that speak English, United States, Australia, Canada, UK, but in other countries as well. But the thing with this preferential voting, that's what you call it there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's what we call it. Yeah.
In America, we call it RCV, ranked choice voting, but it's pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
And a couple of states actually use it. So Alaska just switched to using it. Maine has used it for a couple of election cycles. One of the Congress members in Maine, his name is Jared Golden. Fun fact, he unseated an incumbent a couple of years ago. But if you look at the raw vote totals, he actually came in second. The incumbent Republican actually got, I think, 1% more of the raw vote than Jared Golden, the Democrat, did. But Jared Golden still won because there was a couple of minor party fringe candidates, I guess an independent, a libertarian, a green. And just like you're saying, Hayden, in Australia, so they all gave it to the Democrat. None went to the Republican. Yeah.
And that artificially gives them – and they use the system to artificially give someone a 50% plus one vote, win at the end of it. But whereas in reality, the electorate didn't really vote for them that much. And that's one of the big issues. The electorate finds it really hard, or the people voting, the citizens, find it really hard to organise themselves to vote people out that are no good. I mean, the current government that just won the state election in South Australia back in March, that had been in power for 16 years, had run up a colossal state debt in the billions. It's only got a population of 1 million.
Sounds like the Democrats in New York.
Yep. Oh, they're just tax and spend is the way to go for these guys. And they finally got thrown out in 2018, but then they've on preferences, they just won the election that just happened, and they're back in again.
And a raw vote, they didn't, right?
No, they didn't on raw vote, no.
Yeah, it's just crazy. Now, tell me about this. Am I saying his name right? Albanese?
Oh,
Anthony, tell me about him.
Anthony Albanese,
yeah,
otherwise known as Albo. He's a bit of an empty suit, really. He's just like Biden. The reports I'm hearing from people in Australia is he didn't really have a plan, didn't really want to be leader, didn't think he'd win, and now he's in power and he's wandering around doing all the glad handing internationally. But at this stage, they're so lacking in planning that they're not going to have a budget till the end of July, and that's just unheard of. Usually governments have a budget for what they're going to do within a few weeks to a month at the most of being elected. He's just basically a unionist who's made his way up through the ranks of the ALP and wound up being in the position where he happens to be sitting on the leadership seat when they get elected.
And we're seeing this trend a lot, like these left-wing parties. Their platform is very radical, but their leadership is this empty suit, Biden, Albanese, career politician guy. Mm. Why do you think that's the case?
Well, I think they're easy to just sell. Basically allows the socialist left guys to do a soft sell on the public. I mean, similar to here, the Labor government people didn't really push out many policies. The few things they did push out were just horrendous tax and spend schemes and economically wouldn't have worked. So no one really wanted to get them into power. But there was a huge protest vote against the sitting government because of what happened during COVID in the last few years. And so, bang, they've now got this guy in place, and they're going to have buyer's regret in Australia.
So he's a moderate face for radical policy, the same thing that we're saying about Biden.
And I mean, his performance on the campaign was just dreadful. I saw some of his interviews and long-form speeches and press club stuff, and he was just dreadful.
Now, did he campaign from his basement?
No, probably the beach.
Okay, so a little bit better than Biden.
Yeah.
At least you didn't elect a leader who campaigned from the basement.
Yeah, and like a lot of guys, politicians out there, he went through the process of playing dress-ups. You know, so we're going to go see a farm, so we'll wear farm gear. We're going to see builders, right, wear building gear. And just if that was basically the strength of his campaign. And economically, their ideas were just rubbish.
Kind of reminds me of Hillary Clinton. Like, she would go to the South. Like, she would go here in northern Florida or go to Georgia, and she would have this fake Southern accent.
Yeah.
Or she would go to California, and she'd say, gnarly. You know, California, gnarly, yeah, bro. Yeah.
Give them some surfing lingo.
Yeah.
Flip-flops and shorts.
Yeah.
That'd be a terrible sight. But
just these fake astroturfed politicians.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking about some of them later when I do the midterm analysis. Yeah. These are not just people on the left. There's people on the right who do this as well. They play dress up.
And this is the same, another parallel with Australia. We've had basically an entrenched political leadership class. Two major parties have dominated the place for decades and decades. And it didn't matter. For a long time, it seemed like no matter which party was in, the country kept moving in the same direction, following sort of globalist ideas. I mean, virtually all manufacturing is offshored in Australia.
Wow.
I mean, unless you're a barista, you're going to have trouble getting a job there unless it's in the defence industry. The Chinese have been making huge inroads into the country, trying to buy things up. I know that ScoMo, Scott Morrison, he was the last Prime Minister, his government was trying to push back against the Chinese, but that's bitten them this time. Apparently the Chinese community in Australia have voted a lot in favour of the Labor government, not on block, so that was quite interesting.
Wow, and that wasn't the case before.
No, and there was obviously a lot of coordination of different ethnic community groups in that as well. So.
Wow, and another thing that I observed with Australia, the gas prices are really high there, right?
Yeah, that's another thing. Since the election, gas prices have just gone through the roof. They're now when I was there last year, it was around about $1.30 Australian a litre, which is times that by four for a gallon. Now it's over $2 a litre, and it's going. They reckon it'll go to $3, so that'll be $12 Australian a gallon by the end of the year.
So California prices, almost.
Well, they're sort of between New Jersey and California prices now. And other energy things like natural gas, which we were switching the whole energy system over to in Australia, that's suddenly hit a huge spike. It was $10 a unit, Australian dollars a unit for gas. That's going to over $800 a unit for natural gas. So that means people's cooking, home heating, all that sort of stuff is going to be incredibly expensive from now.
Yeah, well, there you have it. That is Australia. Now, this is a segment that we're going to be doing on a lot of our podcasts. Actually, on all of our podcasts, we're going to be saying what is going on with Australia. Now, let's go in back to American politics.
I think it's time we talk about the local primaries.
It's time we talk about the United States Congress and what is going on with that, because in the month of June, we've had a lot of primaries.
And Tony's off to the races.
Yep. Tony's at the races. One quick note, we are recording this podcast on June 7th. So there are primaries today.
That's California, New Jersey.
California, New Jersey, a couple of other states. We are not going to be discussing those primaries on this episode. We will discuss them next episode in 2 weeks from now.
Yep.
And California, really interesting situation there. There is a very radical, far-leftist, Soros-backed AG in San Francisco named Chesa Boudin. I think that's how you say his name.
Yeah, that's it. Yep.
And he's very likely to get recalled. As I said, next episode, we'll check back and see if he actually does. Okay, so let's start out with Ohio. All right, so Ohio was the first state to hold their primaries. Actually, Texas was back in March.
Who was the Trump candidate back there
in Ohio?
Yeah.
So Ohio was the first state because Texas had runoffs that were just a couple of weeks ago. So Ohio was the first state to have like their full rounds of the primaries.
Yep.
So the Trump endorsed candidate for U.S. Senate in Ohio, his name is J.D. Vance. He is a random author dude, and he won his primary with, I think, 32% of the vote. So I know before we were talking about winning with 32% of the vote is not good. Well, in this case, I'll allow it because J.D. Vance is absolutely amazing. I love this guy. He is, like me, a populist America First conservative.
And the good thing is he beat some much bigger well-financed campaigns, too.
Yep. He defeated Josh Mandel, who is, I mean, he's okay, but he's a little bit too hawkish for me, you know, this, oh, we need to go to war in Ukraine. Not America First at all. Solid on social issues and on economic issues, but, I mean, loses me on foreign policy. The other guy he beat in the primary was Matt Dolan, a literal hardcore never-Trumper impeachment Republican. So I'm glad that – I remember we were together on that primary night. We were going over podcast prep, and I was saying, you know what? I'll be okay with Mandel, but Dolan – better lose, and he did lose.
Yeah.
Ohio, unfortunately, did renominate their incumbent governor. I call him Mike Lockdown DeWine. He was the only Republican governor who locked down really hard. Like, he locked down almost as hard as some Democrat governors did.
Yeah, I'm surprised he got put that up. But
Well, a lot of it has to do with the fact that Ohio doesn't have runoffs like a lot of these states that we will discuss later on, like Georgia. He also won because his opposition vote was just completely split. There was a congressman, Jim Renacci, the guy who I wanted. I actually met him at a Catholic men's conference a month ago, but he had his vote split by this random farmer guy named Joel Blystone, who had this real like blue-collar farmer appeal, but they just split the vote and allowed Renacci to lose and DeWine to win renomination.
Do you think this is where local state issues have more impact than the bigger federal stuff? Or
I do, because I for my day job, I do talk to a lot of people who live in Ohio, and DeWine's pretty popular even with the America First Trump crowd. They don't like that he locked down, but they like him on other issues.
Yeah.
And that's the same situation with governor we're going to talk about later. So that's Ohio. I'm so glad J.D. Vance won. He is awesome. He's a great guy to watch in the U.S. Senate. He's going to replace Rob Portman, who is retiring. That's going to be Republican hold. Trump did endorse him. It was kind of a last-minute endorsement, but I do want to preface this by saying this is one of the few Trump endorsements I actually agree with. All right, we're moving on to West Virginia. There was a congressional race. West Virginia, dwindling in population, lost one House seat. They went from having three to having two. So two incumbent congressmen primaried each other. Alex Mooney was backed by Trump. He won in a landslide. He beat a guy named David McKinley, who was a pro Build Back Better Republican, and he also voted for the January 6th Commission.
Complete rhino. Then.
Yep, complete rhino. Yeah. Glad he's gone. Nebraska, Trump endorsed a candidate for governor, and he lost to the guy who I wanted to win, Jim Pillen.
Yep.
The guy Trump backed, Charles Herbster. He also had some sexual assault allegations and
plays well in an election, does it?
So people are saying that was Trump's first big loss of the primary season, but people are saying that has nothing to do with Trump, has everything to do with those allegations. I happen to agree. Okay, now we go to the primaries on May 17th. These are ones I'm not too thrilled with the outcomes. Let's talk about Madison Cawthorn. So Madison Cawthorn, he's a year older than me, and I still consider him, I consider myself really young. I'm 25. He's 26. And he was a freshman incumbent congressman from Western North Carolina, the 11th district, nestled in the Blue Ridge Mountains. He lost renomination to a state senator named Chuck Edwards. I honestly don't know what to make of Edwards. I think he is kind of like what you call a generic Republican. I don't think he's a rhino. He says he's pro-Trump.
But everyone's saying they're pro-Trump at the moment.
So. I mean, some people are not. I mean, Matt Dolan in Ohio didn't say he was pro-Trump.
True, true.
But, yeah,
Liz Cheney's not.
Liz Cheney is decidedly anti-Trump, running in the state that Trump did the best in, Wyoming. We'll see how that works for her. Yeah. But, you know, going back...
I know she's doing all her fundraising in D.C.
You know, going back to North Carolina and Madison Cawthorn, just an unfortunate situation. Trump did endorse him, but the reason why he lost had to do with a lot of the scandals that he was plagued with.
See, I never really understood what was going on there. I just heard bits and pieces in the media. I wasn't paying much attention to it. Because to me, he seemed like a guy with a lot of energy, was saying all the right things. And then it all went negative.
Yeah, it's just a very unfortunate situation. I've actually met him. He's a great guy. I fully support him. I wish him the best with his career. I really hope he runs again. But I think at this point, I think he's going to go into the media, maybe become a podcaster like us, Hayden.
Hey.
But, yeah.
If we can do it, anyone can.
Yeah, but I think the situation with him, so we're not going to go into what his allegations were. Well, they're not allegations. These are things that actually happened. He actually did these things. Very immature, unbecoming acts. I do not condone anything he did at all. But I think...
Do you think he'll have a comeback?
I don't think he'll have a comeback, but I don't think he was... I don't think he'll have a comeback just yet. Maybe in a couple of years, we'll wait for things to blow over and for him to get older and more mature. But I think his loss is cancel culture in the Republican Party. People say cancel culture is just a Democratic thing. No, this is an act of a Republican saying
Do you think they were just put off because he was just so strong on some issues that they just thought were no-go issues?
So I think that his loss had 100% to do with these scandals and with these immature, childish behavior of him. Yeah. And, you know, as a young person, this makes me – I do want to run for office. I'm very open about this in a couple of years, but this makes me highlight the in a couple of years part because I need experience. I need life skills. Hayden, I mean, you're different. I mean, I think you should go now. But anyway,
I'm part of the gray hairs, man. So
anyway, Madison Cawthorn, I wish him the best. I would love to have him as a guest on this podcast. We could talk about what happened. But going to the other major primary that was on that day, and that is Pennsylvania. And
that's finally finished now, hasn't it?
Yeah, finally has finished.
McCormick conceded, which we think is a great idea.
And, Rhino Dave McCormick, China Dave, as I call him, has conceded. And now we ask ourselves the question, to Dr. Oz or not Dr. Oz? Hayden, what say you?
Well, I mean, obviously he's got a huge public profile. He's self-funded. So from just the point of view of campaigning, he's in a really good spot. He's been saying all the right things. I saw him at CPAC, and he seems like a very genuine bloke. I can only hope he sticks to his word and doesn't turn into a rhino magically overnight.
Absolutely. And now we are going another state, and I do want to spend a couple of time on it, a little bit of time on this. It is Georgia. Georgia is on our mind.
Yep.
So Georgia... Trump, let's just say he absolutely flopped there. He endorsed the candidate for governor of Georgia.
Yep. Was Perdue, wasn't it?
Yeah. David Perdue, former senator. Yep. I actually not for his governor run. I campaigned for him when he ran for re-election to the Senate. And lost very narrowly to John Ossoff. I mean, we'll discuss later if that election was a real loss or if it maybe was a little bit of fraud involved. But anyway, Perdue tried to make a political comeback, and he absolutely failed. He lost, I think, by 50% of the vote.
Yeah, he did. He, I mean, I was surprised he even bothered to turn up on the night.
Yeah, and Trump candidates down ballot lost as well. Secretary of State, I really thought that Brad Raffensperger was going to lose. He was the guy who pretty much signed off on, you know what, we're not going to investigate this fraud. And he won his primary against a very strong challenger, incumbent Congressman Jody Heiss. And Heiss actually lost all of the congressional districts except for his own. He even lost Marjorie Taylor's Green district. So get this. Marjorie Taylor Greene voted for the Marjorie Taylor Greene's district voted for
Raffensperger, not for him.
The anti-Trump candidate.
Wow.
So it's
But one of the things with Kemp's campaign and Raffensperger, they made it all about Georgia and they tried to distance themselves from Trump. And I think that's what paid off for them in the long run.
So, Yep. And at the end of the day, all politics are local, and that's just the thing. You can't nationalize elections. Now, Trump's endorsed Senate candidate did win big, Herschel Walker.
Yep.
But everyone knew he was going to win big. The surprise was that Kemp actually won by a slightly larger margin than he did, and no one expected that at all. I'm active on Twitter a lot, on the election Twitter specifically. Follow me at RealTonyEdwards. But I was the only one on Twitter who said that Kemp was going to win by over 60% of the vote. I should have said that he was going to win by over 70% of the vote because he did. Everyone thought he was going to win by like 52, 53.
Yeah. I mean, I always thought he was going to win well. It's just by how much, because he put in a strong campaign and he was obviously strong in his state. And, and I think a lot of Georgians could see the specter of Stacey Abrams in the background, and you don't want to put someone untested up against someone like her.
Absolutely, and Stacey Abrams just cannot become governor. Whatever you say about Kemp, he's not Stacey Abrams. If you live in Georgia, please vote for him because we can't have her be governor. And speaking of Trump's endorsements in Georgia, he endorsed two very, very bad congressional candidates, and both of them came in second place in the primaries. And they did much poorer than expected. So in the 6th district, we have this very liberal, socially liberal Republican named Jake Evans. He is a lawyer. And
the Justin Bieber lookalike.
Yep, he looks like Justin Bieber.
Without the tattoos.
Yep.
Or the
without you know, the good looks. He has the bowl cut and he has none of the musical talent. But this guy, Jake Evans, he is probably the most cringiest candidate, to use a millennial term. He is super cringe. He's one of these people the Republican Party should moderate to attract young voters. It should become more inclusive.
As long as they're rhinos like Jake.
Yep, and he is such a blatant rhino. This guy literally penned a law review paper that he thought no one except for his rich elitist crowd would read, called the I think it was University of Miami Law Review, but it was something woke title. It was about the funding the police and about something about like systemic racism.
Yeah, all the policies that people are currently reacting against at the moment.
So. And he pretty much in this paper, you can read it online. Just type in Jake Evans critical race theory paper or Jake Evans to fund the police, and you'll see it. It's available to read. It is shocking that Trump endorsed this guy for Congress. In that paper, he's pro-CRT, pro-BLM. And, you know, we were talking before about Trump's other picks in Georgia failing. I mean, this one, he is in a – so Georgia has this rule. You have to get 50% of the vote. Otherwise, you go to runoff. So he is in a runoff with this really great guy. His name is Rich McCormick. He's a doctor.
I saw Rich today on Newsmax talking about monkeypox. He's a very – well-educated bloke.
He is the chief medical correspondent of Newsmax. He was actually their main doctor during the pandemic. This guy's got great cred. He's served 20 years in the military, 16 years as a Marine, 4 years as a Navy pilot. He volunteered to go to Afghanistan, has 7 kids, a wife, been married a while, is a youth pastor. This guy's done everything. Yeah. And Trump goes out and endorses this socially liberal Jake Evans. Oh, and also to mention, Rich is solidly conservative across the board. America first.
Yep.
Jake Evans wants to send U.S. troops to Ukraine, so he's even.
When you cut down to it, there's just nothing about Jake Evans. Yeah. He's just got very little life experience compared to Rich, and you know he just shouldn't. He's just.
And the reason why Trump endorsed him, and this is a main issue I have with Trump, and the main issue why I want DeSantis as a nominee and not Trump, in addition to Trump's age, is that Jake Evans' dad, Randy Evans, was Trump's ambassador to Luxembourg. So Randy pretty much said, hey, Trump, hey, President Trump, you know, endorse my son. So there's a little bit of nepotism going on there.
Yeah, a little bit of nepotism never goes astray, I say.
Yep. And we spent a lot of time on Jake. Also want to quickly touch on the other congressional election that went to runoff in Georgia. Okay, we're going to go to another, the other congressional election that went to runoff in Georgia, and that's Georgia's 10th congressional district. And that is Vernon Jones, the Trump-endorsed candidate, another terrible Trump endorsement, running against Collins.
And this has really surprised me because, I mean, I've seen Vernon Jones in the media, and he seemed to be saying all the right things, saying he was coming over to the Republican side, moving away from the dark side, all that sort of stuff.
He is a total, total grifter, like complete grifter. And he's still a Democrat, voted for abortion twice in the Georgia House. We'll talk about him more in depth on a future episode, but just terrible pick. All right. So now we're going to segue into the elephant in the room, and that is a 2020 election. I hear a lot of people say
more like a herd of elephants in the room.
A herd of elephants in the room. I hear a lot of people saying, oh, you know, these midterms are great, and I really want to, you know, I really want the Republicans to win, but I'm afraid to vote because I'm afraid of my vote actually mattering and my voice being heard. Now,
I can say from experience in Australia, every vote really does count. Even though we've got problems in Oz, if you don't turn up and make a valid vote, then you've got no chance of changing anything.
So first, I'm going to tell everyone we're going to discuss the 2020 election and, you know, whether or not there was fraud. Peyton and I are both of the opinion we are not, but we're going to have both of the opinion that there definitely was fraud and that the election definitely was rigged to some extent.
Yeah. I mean, I was overseas at the time, and people in Australia, people in Singapore, people in the UK, they all looked at that and they just went, that looks really wrong.
But now, regardless of your opinion on that, you still have to go out and you still have to vote, because if the other side does cheat, and I'll be honest, I think there's going to be much less cheating in this midterm election than there was in the presidential election. Even if the Democrats do cheat, we have to go out, we have to overwhelm the rig.
Yeah. And, I mean, look, if you look at it this way, I think it went something like this. 2016, the Democrats got a kick in the pants. 2018, they say we've got to try and win back the House, so they fought like hell for the midterms. Then they pulled out all the stops for 2020, and we see that in the way Biden's administration is. They are trying to do so much in such a short period of time. It's just craziness.
And this brings us to the movie 2000 Mules that just came out by Dinesh D'Souza. And we're actually going to have a guest on right now. He is a lawyer from Georgia. His name is Brad Schober, and he's going to discuss with us 2000 Mules. And Brad, are you here?
Hello?
Hey, Brad, welcome to Jack's Loose Cannons. You're on with Hayden and I.
Hi there. How you going, Brad?
Hey, I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Not too bad.
All right. So, Brad, we brought you on because we are going to discuss the question that is on everybody's mind. Was the 2020 election stolen or rigged or anything of the like? And we brought Brad on. Brad volunteered to be on the show because Brad is a conservative Republican, and he is of the opinion that, you say, was the election stolen, yes or no?
Well, to start off with a little bit of background, I got a first look at this. I am an attorney who previously was the legal analyst at a Georgia State Senate on the Judiciary Committee, working with Senator Brian Strickland, as he helped craft Senate Bill 202, which was the election integrity bill. And in that position, we were able to look at a lot of the data, and what we could tell was the, you know, mistakes in counting. Yes, but after three recounts, we determined that Donald Trump, at least in the state of Georgia, did not win.
And Georgia was the closest state in the 2020 election. That the official count says that Biden only, quote unquote, won the state by 12,000 votes. And you think that Biden actually won that state still?
Well, famously, we learned that the difference was 11,779 based on the infamous phone call that was leaked. And what we determined, or what we saw, was were there, you know, changes after recounts? Was there human errors? Yes. Was there a widespread form of illegal votes cast? We did not see that.
Right.
Mm. Now, both Hayden and I disagree with you on this. but you know what's cool about this is that this is literally the only podcast where you will see an honest discussion of this issue. This is an issue that you're not allowed to discuss. And I just think that just deprives American voters, because I think American voters want to hear both sides like they are hearing now and come to a conclusion. So we really thank you for being on, Brad. Now, please discuss what you think of the movie 2000 Mules, because you did mention to me that you watched it. Mm. And do you think that you are convinced the election was not stolen? But both Hayden and I watched it. We thought that the evidence in that movie is at least clear that there was widespread voter fraud. What would you say to counter that?
So 2000 Mules has raised some interesting specific cases that I know the Georgia Secretary of State's office has tried to look into. But True the Vote has even asked for some of the evidence to be handed over to the Georgia Secretary of State's office. And it has not yet been handed over. So we know that investigations have started into some of the allegations raised. Whether or not they go anywhere will depend on whether or not we get the information, which I'm not a part of that, so I don't know the full inside scoop. I do know that in watching 2000 Mules, and I believe it was Prager who raised this point.
Yeah.
There are two questions to be asked. One, were the ballots submitted illegally? And two, even if the ballots are submitted illegally, are they still valid?
Yeah.
And as Georgia law currently states, there are two legal ways to submit a ballot that isn't your own, and that's if your family, and the other way is for somebody who is mentally incompetent, is disabled, physically can't do it. So there are legal ways to submit a ballot that are not your own, but we don't know all the cases yet based on 2000 Mules. Where 2000 Mules has struck a chord with some people is in Georgia. They represented a city and they did data points based on tracking people's phones. And the city that they used to represent Georgia, which, fun fact about Georgia, has no natural lakes in it, no major water forms. There are some, but not many. And they used Gwinnett County as an example. And the city that they used to represent it was actually a mock video or mock up of the city of Moscow in Russia. That was just inverted.
Wait a second, Brad. So this does not do the left-wing narrative that Republicans are colluding with Russia any good. It does that narrative very good.
So, you know, we may have certain disagreements, but I think we can all agree that we believe that in the United States, it should be easy to cast a ballot.
Yep.
And it should 100%. Be hard to cheat.
Yep.
And
exactly, yeah.
And I agree with that, and I'd like to see that happen. And I'm just concerned about getting the right narrative out there, because what happens is if you make a mistake like that, then somebody will look at it and say, well, I don't believe what you said now. And the people who are in power, you know, often have to believe what they're told.
Mm. Absolutely. And
And I was going to say, if somebody tells them, that's not it, they're not going to pay attention.
Absolutely. Yeah. And thank you so much for your input on the election. And going to Georgia, because you do live in Georgia, you are a Georgia politics expert. You worked for the state house, right, in Georgia?
I worked for both the state house and the state senate.
Wow. So we were talking about Kemp winning this unforeseen super landslide victory earlier. And we're talking about the Trump. Obviously, we're talking a lot about how bad Jake Evans and Vernon Jones are. This is something all Republican primary voters should know and go to the polls, and vote for their opponents. But I want you to weigh in on the results of the Georgia primaries, because you were telling me that Kemp was going to win big and that all the Trump endorsed candidates were going to lose big. And what do Georgia voters have that, you know, every other Republican, you know, who think like who goes with whatever Trump says to be gospel? Not every other Republican, but a lot of Republicans who like to follow Trump all the time. What's different about these Georgia primary voters?
So I know a lot of the narrative was, or at least now, is Democrats switching over. It's possible that that may have affected the Secretary of State's race. But otherwise, that wasn't so much of an issue with the other statewide races like governor, labor commissioner, and it was governor, commissioner,
I think,
and
there
attorney
was like a
general.
School board. Yeah, attorney general.
And attorney general.
Yeah.
So those were the three main Trump-endorsed challengers.
Yep.
And in each case, you would have needed 300,000, almost 400,000 Democrats to have made a difference if they had voted. And you just didn't see that. What ended up happening was polling is based on the previous election's primary voters. Previous election, Donald Trump was on the ballot. So a lot of people who won't vote in midterms but do vote in general elections came out for Donald Trump. And we knew that they may not come out for David Perdue.
Yeah.
That was just the math. But on top of that, you know, David Perdue never laid a good foundation of why he was challenging Kemp.
Except for the narrative surrounding the 2020 election.
Correct. He only had the election was stolen. But even then, there were Republicans and conservatives who said, I'm not happy with what happened in 2020. But Governor Kemp has governed like a conservative. He had the largest tax cut, and he ran on the largest tax cut in Georgia state history. He ran on passing the heartbeat bill, the most pro-life legislation in state history.
DeSantis, take note, please, because we need that here.
And so, you know, he was able to run on a conservative record.
And his COVID policy, too, was pretty good. I think he was the first governor to – I mean, Kristi Noem never locked down, as so people say. But he was the first governor to never reopen the state before DeSantis.
And you had a lot of even Democrats who said, you know, I'm glad that I was able to stay sane throughout COVID. Hmm. So he had a strong record that he could run on. And, you know, none of the Trump endorsed candidates beyond saying the 2020 presidential election were able to break through the conservative record of the incumbents. It also doesn't hurt that in Georgia, we label the word incumbent on our ballot.
Yep.
So people yep. come in and vote, they're going to just click that.
Yeah.
Mm. That's very interesting stuff, Brad. And thank you again for being on the show today.
Yeah.
We'll hope to have you on in the future
if you come
to talk
back again,
about these Georgia elections. But real quick before we go, Jake Evans and Vernon Jones, yes or no?
I think both Jake Evans and Vernon Jones are going to lose. And to quote the President of the United States, they're going to lose bigly.
Yep. Yeah. Your mouth to God's ears, Brad. Well, there you have it. That's Brad Schober, lawyer from Georgia. Thank you again for being on this show.
Thank you, Brad.
Thank you for having me.
And now we are going to go right to our next guest to close out our first podcast. So this guest that we're going to have on right now, his
I'm
name...
I'm pretty excited about this guy. He sounds pretty
good. This guy is awesome. His name is Luis Miguel. And he is running for State House in Florida. Luis, you're on the air with me and Hayden.
Hi there, Luis. How are you?
Hey there, Hayden. I'm doing fantastic. How are you doing?
Not too bad.
So, Luis, you are running for State House in Florida in the new 20th district. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Awesome. So,
so whereabouts is that 20th district, by the way?
So the district encompasses all of Putnam County, which is basically the heart or the nucleus of the district, and then pieces of surrounding counties, southwest St. John's County, which is primarily the farm country, Elton, Hastings, West Augustine. And then you have parts of Clay County, Middleburg, Green Cove Springs, and then it includes a sizable portion of northern Marion County.
So it's a pretty big district if you look at a map. It's one of the largest area-wise districts in Florida, so it's a very rural district. Rural issues, land issues, overdevelopment, very important there. We're definitely going to talk about that.
And beautiful.
I mean, and it's I love driving through that area. But Luis, I first heard of you. You were running for U.S. Senate, primarying Marco Rubio from the right, or Senator Waterboy, as I like to call him, because every time he's in an interview, he gets thirsty and he always uses those little water bottles. And
hey, you got to stay hydrated.
Yep. Well, you're from Florida. As someone who's lived here for almost two years. I don't blame him one bit for doing that. But Luis, you were running against him from the right, which is a very noble cause because Rubio is pretty much a rhino and we definitely needed a conservative person. But why did you switch to State House?
That's a fantastic question. And it's funny that you bring up the true fact that he always used a little water bottle. It's very in keeping with his nickname of Little Marco, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, I absolutely recant nothing that I ever said about Rubio. I still very much hold by my statements that he is one of the biggest traitors that we have sitting in the Capitol building right now. Well, maybe not right now, because let's face it, he has one of the worst attendance records of anybody and hardly is ever there actually doing his job.
Wow.
But I came to realize that I have a much greater force for here in our state. I mean, the reality is that most of the problems we have, it can't be solved in Washington, D.C. Although, of course, I support patriots who are running for federal office. I believe we need more people doing that, of course. I fully am behind them. However, in many ways, Congress can't solve the problem because it is part of the problem. The federal government has become much too powerful. And really what we actually need to get back to the system that was created by the framers, by the men who understood limited government and the principles on liberty on which this country was founded.
Exactly.
What we really need is a restoration of state sovereignty.
Yeah.
And to do that, it has to come not from the inside of the halls of the Congress, but from the outside. It has to come from the states who, like the colonists during the War for Independence, put pressure from the outside. And I'll give as an example that during the War for Independence, what you didn't have was the colonists saying, well, we're going to go work the problem from the inside in the halls of Parliament. On the contrary, you had the state governments assert their independence, declare their sovereignty, and that's essentially what has to be done at this time of our country.
Yeah, I agree entirely there. I'm from overseas, but I've lived in several countries that are highly centralized and that just doesn't function well. I think the founders had a great understanding of human nature when they put things in place, and I think getting back to that original concept is a great idea.
Absolutely, and we were talking a lot about the U.S. congressional races before, but Luis, a lot of these laws that really govern us are created at the state level, and we really need a lot of people sadly don't know who their incumbent state representative or state senator is, and those are the people that are really making most of their laws. So that's why I really commend you for running for this office and for deciding that even though that Rubio is, you know, someone who definitely needs to be primaried maybe the next time he's up for election, right now we need a lot of help in the state government.
Exactly, exactly. And you know, you hit the nail on the head. And most of the issues that really truly affect us are either done at the state and local level or should be addressed at the state and local level. Mm. And many issues that we seem to be really focused on the national stage, it could be handled, could be addressed very ably by statesmen within our respective states if our state legislatures actually had the courage and the insight and the fortitude to actually go about it. And that includes issues like combating communist China, election integrity. You know, many of these things need to be addressed at the state level.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And we were talking extensively about election integrity. We just had a debate on whether or not the election was stolen. We had a guest from Georgia, Brad, on, who claimed it wasn't. And I know you agree with Hayden and I that the election was definitely was rigged. What are some pieces of legislation that you will propose or co-sponsor when you get to Tallahassee to make sure that in the state of Florida, this level of ballot harvesting that went on in states like Georgia and in other states like Arizona will never happen here?
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. I mean, it just gets to the heart of our republic. If you don't have fair, free, and safe elections, then you don't have a republic. That's the foundation everything rests on. Mm. And so restoring that public trust is essential. How do you do that? You know, for one, you have to get rid of the different mechanisms, and there are many, and by which they have and are perpetrating voter fraud, even here in Florida. Part of it, as we saw in 2020, was with the technology that they're using. And the reality is that you still have a lot of the technology, the Mina Smartmatic, operating in several counties within Florida. So we need to, first of all, investigate these machines and get what any kind of evidence we can get out of them. And then we need to prohibit these machines and make sure we return to common sense paper ballots. We also need to, in on the recent legislation that Governor Santis supported and signed, took good steps in reducing the threat of mail-in voting, which was one of the chief ways that they perpetrated voter fraud in 2020. We have to go further. In my view, we need to completely ban mail voting unless you're a member of the armed forces serving abroad or somebody who notarized for a legitimate health reason is going to request with ID and everything a mail ballot. But other than that, the principle of no excuse absentee voting has to end. And then there are a slew of other proposals that I would very much advance as part of this overall package to secure elections. For example, ensuring that candidates and parties and other interested committees are allowed to have their poll watchers close enough to examine the counting process.
Yeah, that was definitely an issue in states like Georgia and Pennsylvania,
exactly.
Too.
It surprised me. I did some scrutineering at elections back, which is like poll watching back in Australia, and we were allowed to watch every vote that was counted, and we were in the room with the people counting it. So that shouldn't be an issue. That should be part of the process.
Yeah. Well,
absolutely.
Yeah, and Luis, I definitely really want to commend you for what you're doing. If you live in the 20th district of Florida, please go out and vote for this guy in the primary. When is the primary date? It's August 23rd, right?
That's right. Tuesday, August 23rd.
We still got some ways to go, and we definitely want to have you on future episodes as well to weigh in on other issues that you have really taken a stand on. Writing for the New American Magazine. I know you've written some amazing articles about the extent that communist China is buying up land in the state of Florida and throughout the U.S., and also about the extent of how bad BLM and Antifa terrorism is. And we would love to have you on in future episodes to talk about that as well. So where can people find you, Luis?
Sure. Be sure to visit LuisMiguelForFlorida.com, and you can find me on all social media, Twitter, and all the rest of them with the handle at LuisMiguelUS.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Luis, and we'll be happy to hear from you.
Yeah, I look forward to having you back on the program.
Yep. And maybe in a couple of episodes, you'll be our rep-elect.
Yeah, good luck.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All God right. bless you. Thank you for your time, Luis. And okay. there we have it.
That's Aiden. It. Episode one.
In the books.
So the next episode is going to be in 2 weeks' time, we're planning. Yep. And we'll get on and discuss more about the Georgia race there. And the New Jersey race and California race and the other primaries that are happening today, we'll cover those. And I'm most interested to see how that guy Chester Bodine's recall goes. That should be fascinating.
I hope he goes down in flames, or as Brad says and President Trump says, loses bigly.
Yeah, I heard today, because he was Soros-backed, and I've heard Soros has put in place 75 or funded the emplacement of 75 prosecutors across the country, which is just unreal.
It's a coordinated, pretty much like the mafia, essentially.
Mm.
You know?
Yep.
Nice city you have here. It would be a shame if something happened to it. But yep. We'll definitely be talking about that on our next episode. More updates from Australia as well.
There's a lot
crazy stuff going down under.
It's changing on a weekly basis down there.
Yep. And thank you again for tuning in and spending the last hour with us. You can follow me on Twitter at RealTonyEdwards. All right, guys. See you in 2 weeks. God bless America.